Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, 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 oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of the show, recognize they're on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is Part Sinner, Part Saint on Blog Talk Radio. We are part of Late Night Poets, which is a group on allpoetry.com. And you don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can chat with us and read the poems at the same time we do. That's helpful for following along. And just make comments and be a part of everything. So check out Late Night Poets on allpoetry.com. I'm Aphasiana, and with me, I have two of LNP's wonderful hosts, Babbler and Pam. Hello, ladies.
Hello,
hello.
Babbler, did you figure out a computer situation for tonight?
I've got my old MacBook set up. It is super slow, and it is constantly updating because I don't think I've turned the thing on in probably almost 5 years.
Yeah, that's a lot of updates to do.
So if I struggle, there's a chance that my computer is just updating. So everyone's aware, randomly yesterday, my computer just ignited into flames. I was really lucky that I smelled it and that I was home and that I can put it out. But, yeah, I'm kind of without my normal computer.
Wow, that's scary. And thank goodness you were home.
Yeah. And that I could smell it, yeah.
Yeah, it's surprising it wasn't when you were doing something. Because, like, sometimes playing a game that takes a lot of memory or something, the fan really goes, and then I'm like, oh, got to be careful because it's getting hot. But, like, if you're not even using it, I don't understand how that happens.
No, I don't know. I think maybe you pissed off a witch or something. Somebody put a hex on it.
I've had some people say similar because it was last week. My computer monitor just made a random pop noise. Now, I was using a computer at that time, and then it had a big old crack in it. So,
wow.
I'm also back to using my old computer monitors.
You know what? That happened at work for us this week, and we thought it was vandalism because our recording studio has a computer in it that people use, like, with microphones and stuff, and when we went in there, it was all cracked and broken, the screen. And so we kind of assumed it was the last person who was in there who swears he didn't do it. But what if it's just going around? The computers are exploding.
Yeah, I'll say it's super weird. It was super weird because, like, nothing happened. I didn't drop it. I didn't move it. I didn't, like, nothing. So.
Weird.
Yeah. Sometimes. Anyway, how's everyone else? Haunted folks.
All right. Well, I put out the call and I said Babbler might not be able to be here, and Pam answered because Pam is our hero all the time. Pam, the hero of the helping out. So thank you, Pam, for being here.
Oh yeah, I'm glad to be here. It's not really often that I get to hang out with both of you ladies at the same time, so it's going to be a fun night.
Absolutely. We have two carryovers from last week. So last week we had a contest that was the artwork of Svetlana Melik-Nubaro, and all of the images were women and birds, and in most of them it was like the birds were nested inside of her and she was in a cage, or her clothes were like a cage. Generally, all of the women were caged, and yet they had birds who were free. So it was interesting statements in those images, and we have two left over from those responses. So I'm going to put one up now by Vamped Vixen, and this is called Queen of the Ball. When she beams in all spring's finery, adorned with corsage, flower fluff, courtiers painting portraits by her side, I see the queen she's always been inside. Smiling wide, she tells tales of the palace hall, the shimmer and sparkle of a diamond ballroom, how she finally got to sit up upon her throne and grow roses from soil in the garden, when once upon a time she believed she might not make it to prom at all. When her bloodied bruises were first carried to my cauldron, her mouth dripped with ash and poison, with red apple lines upon her wrist, and all the kingdom's blackbirds locked within her silent chest. We dived into the magic sun, shuffling relics of her bubbling past, fluttering journaled pages of her spellbook, dancing once more within the fairy circle. And my budding apprentice learned incantations to relight her candle's flame. And now I watch as she retakes her kingdom, see pink swish of ball gown skirt, crown upon her head, court musicians playing on this enchanted evening in harmony with all her new blackbird forest friends. She was not born to be locked in some musty dungeon, one dark and as damp as she knew before, shackled to scars and cobwebs that haunted her, hidden traumas behind rusty iron walls. And by some miracle and gift to me, this queen chose me as her fairy godmother, so I could finally see Cinderella off to the ball. End poem.
Great read, Efesiana. I really enjoyed this piece. There was so much magic in here, and I felt like it did a really great job of setting this theme, Queen of the Ball, and really taking the reader to this place where they can envision it. You know, almost like the dance scene from a Disney movie. You know, I think of either Sleeping Beauty or Cinderella or something like that. But maybe a little more serious, you know. The descriptive language is just gorgeous. You know, smiling wide, she tells tales of the palace hall, the shimmer and sparkle of the diamond ballroom, how she finally got to sit upon her throne and grow roses from the soil in this garden. But then it takes you to a place that's, you know, a bit darker. You know, when her bloodied bruises were first carried to my cauldron, her mouth dripped with ash and poison, with red apple lines upon her wrist. It's kind of like the fact that it dips into, you know, the trauma of, you know, this is an allegory, you know, I believe for, you know, real people. But it also, I think, serves as a reminder, too, that even Disney princesses have conflict. You know, at the very least, they have trauma. You know, they're not cakewalks. They're usually something bad that happens in these films. It's not just, you know, they may not be as gnarly as the original fairy tales, you know, from Grimm or Hans Christian Andersen's original rites, but they're, you know, there's usually some kind of evil. And I like how that's even brought up, and then the way you overcome that. You know, we dived into the magics then, shuffling relics of her bubbling past, fluttering journal pages of her spellbook, dancing once more within the fairy circle, you know, relearning how to be happy, relearning how to sit upon your own throne, you know, to overcome trauma, both in the fairy tale allegory, but also, you know, for real people. So I really enjoyed this. I thought it told a really good tale, and it was a really long and nicely woven extended metaphor. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great write from Vamp to Fixin. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really appreciate this poem. Vamped Vixen always, oftentimes, has some very thoughtful and powerful rites. I like the imagery and metaphors in this. I like how, to me, it speaks on the idea of guiding a young woman to really love herself, to have self-awareness and self-confidence. And bringing the dark part that you pointed out, when her bloody bruises were first carried to my cauldron, her mouth dripped with ash and poison, it presents the idea of somebody who really hates themselves, really sees no future for themselves. And then slowly throughout, they learn to love and embrace themselves and realize that they are worthy of going to the ball, that they are worthy of that happy ending. And I do like how, as you were pointing out, that she uses fairy tales to relate to the idea of real life. So excellent write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. I really liked the way that this went, talking about the trauma and how that kept its mark even once they're getting ready to go to the ball. Having the bubbling past is really good, because on the one hand it's like the cauldron bubbling, but also your past bubbles up inside you. You know, there are moments where those bad moments kind of come up and you can't help but think about them. So I thought bubbling past was really good. And I also Where is it now? Shackled to scars and cobwebs that haunted her. I really like that. And cobwebs can kind of look like scars, too, sometimes, or scars can look like cobwebs. Earlier on, around that ash and poison part that both of you talked about, with red apple lines upon her wrist. So on the one hand, you're thinking about, like, Snow White and the poison apple, but apple lines upon her wrist, that makes me think of, like, suicide scars. And then her A.N., is very enlightening, so I'm going to read that because I think it really confirms what the poem is about. It says, "As a therapist, one of my greatest joys is seeing my teen clients hit those milestones that they didn't think their suicidal ideations would allow them to get to. It's prom season, so I'm seeing lots of their prom gowns and prom photos lately, and I'm like, oh my God, my girls are all becoming queens that they were meant to be. That makes me feel like I'm not such a failure in at least this one instance." So she's seeing these girls who were maybe self-harming, maybe thinking about it, had gone through trauma, and are now making it to their balls in real life. And she's using the fairy tale to show that significant moment that happens in real life. So I think that just makes it even more powerful knowing that.
Yeah, thanks for reading the AN. I'm glad she added that. And what a nice, it's nice, you know, I imagine sometimes as being a therapist that it's got to be a little bit difficult, you know, when people, you know, you typically bring you their trauma, and then when they start to feel better, they don't come back, right? Like, that's how you know you've done well, is to not see someone again, theoretically. But it must be nice to see, like, the improvement side of things, too, right? I appreciate that comment. Where are we off to next, Aphasiana?
Now we have one by Freya, and would you please read that, Babbler?
Absolutely. My computer refreshes really slowly. Okay, there we go. This is Caged and Silent by Freya. Caged and silent heart, each rib an ivory-lined labyrinth, minotaurs in every hallway. A narrow space for nature's keys, the restorative power of birdsong. So many ribs, so many bars. Identical, hard, lifeless. When the bird alights, dusted, fragrant with pollen, hollowing out dried debris of another era, a different form. Mystical union, cauldron of eggs, alchemical beaks, sharpen and preen. And poem.
Great read, Babbler. I really liked the idea of minotaurs in every hallway. Like, in the Greek labyrinth, there's only a minotaur you have to deal with in the middle of the labyrinth. But to have one in every hallway, it's like there's trouble on all sides. And I like the way that the caged heart is described, each rib an ivory-lined labyrinth. Like, that's just such beautiful wording. It really creates a striking mental image. And then it's reinforced, so many ribs, so many bars, and to see it as lifeless, that your body is held together by, you know, basically a cage. I like that it used different senses. Fragrant with pollen, thinking about the smell of things. I like the alliteration of dried debris. And then I like the word alchemical. I can't even properly say it, alchemical, sorry, like the idea of like alchemy happening there, which I can't pronounce apparently right now, but I really enjoyed that. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I really thought this was a beautiful write all the way through, strong imagery and metaphors. You know, I really liked also the idea of minotaurs in every hallway. That those, I like that the main theme of this poem to me is the monsters that we face inside ourselves and the journey of healing. When the bird alights, it fragrant with pollen, hollowing out dry debris of another era, a different form. You know, wonderful lines all the way through, but that part really grabbed my attention. And the idea, there's almost a strong feminine voice within those lines that speak on what it's like to be a woman, to have to escape from a history of repression. And so excellent write and very well done.
Thanks, Pam. Babbler, what did you think?
Well, I thought this was lovely. You know, caged and silent heart, each rib an ivory-lined labyrinth. I love the mix of things in this. You know, you've got the heart and the rib cage and ivory, you know, feeling like bone. But then it also feels like a piano, you know, nature's keys and birdsong. And these interweaving of, like, the music and nature and the skeleton, you know, the body, are really nice, you know, triple theme that kind of weaves itself through this rite, which is actually a pretty short rite. You know, it's got 6 stanzas, but there's maybe 10 words-ish in each stanza. And the spacing is really pleasant as well. But I like the mixing of the hard and the soft and the natural and the music. I think it paints a really beautiful imagery. And also this idea of, you know, coming back to life. You know, there's a caged and silent heart, but there's a restorative power of birdsong. And the idea of cleaning out all of the debris within a rib cage, I think, is such a beautiful image. You know, the way that you can come back to life with music and joy. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was well done. Where are we going to now?
So now we're on to another contest. And this was inspired by the video song / poem performance by Ren, who is kind of a YouTube phenomenon. And as far as I know, he doesn't actually have like an actual like label that he goes through, but he has many, many followers on YouTube. And this song was the first one that I was introduced to of like where I discovered him. Actually, my husband found it on YouTube and thought that I would like it, and he was right. It's called Hi Ren, and in the video, he kind of looks like he's in maybe the mental health ward of a hospital, and he is playing the guitar in a wheelchair, and he has a conversation with himself, sort of, and it's a very aggravated conversation, more like a fight, and it's his two kind of personalities having a disagreement. His dark side is saying, like, you may be here, but you're not getting rid of me, and his more sane, I guess, self is saying, like, I don't need you anymore. And they have a big conflict. I wanted to play it as our opening song, but it's actually 9 minutes long, so I thought it was a bit too much for an intro. But I definitely recommend listening to it for anyone who hasn't. It's really an amazing emotive piece, and the music is interesting. The way he does his guitar, and he has like this humming thing that he does. It's really cool. It's a little bit frightening at parts because he's so intense. From what I've read about him, Ren in real life has a lot of mental health struggles, and he has Lyme disease. So he has physical problems, but it's also really influenced his brain. And he has quite a few things going on. So I believe that this comes from a place of experience when he's doing this performance. He has another one called Sick Boy, and I was amazed by that one too. So some lines that I liked in his song, I guess. I think of it as like a poem slash story, but he sings it, is "My name, it is stitched to your lips, and I live in every decision that catalyzed chaos that causes division, and I have stood in the flames that cremated my brain." So it's all just him having a conversation with himself, but it's really fascinating. And the poems that we have are inspired by the video, or at least by those quotes. So let's check them out. Pam, would you please read the poem by Ben Hart?
I would be happy to. All right. This is "The Crowd" by Ben Hart. "Hello, Ben. Are you still telling stories to strangers in the streets, or has anxiety finally killed the make-believe? And did you have something left to say to her, or has run barren your well of grief? If all you're doing is subjugating emptiness, when you will begin to be? And are you done dying, or will we ask the operator of this dysphoric carousel to swing us around again? Have you told her you loved her, or did the moment slip away? And is it your bed she sleeps in at the end of day? Do you still pray because you believe, or because you want to have it your way? Are you still alive? Will you ever be all right? And if so, will the poetry survive? Hey, Sam, I was thinking about you again. How cruel it is of me that I don't just let you meet that I am your keeper, but I keep you to myself. And I should have gotten help at 14 when I still had time to dream and save ourselves from what happened next. And I should have gone to bed at 2 a.m. instead of staying up with you comparing bruises and who left them. And I hated that for all of yours that would be me, because I serve a mean muse, and her name is Misery. And you would have been beautiful had I been braver than I am. Now I am afraid you'll spend our days just a sad story I rarely tell my friends. Canary, to the boy that died the day that they laid her in the reeds, it's all right if that's what you needed, but it's time to go. Take back your 20s. And always sacrifice the plenty for the small. Canary, do not sing unseen. The black cat audience aren't all that mean. Eagle, dare to dream. This is the life. Find your freedoms." End poem.
This is a really interesting piece. The first part, you know, Ben. Hello, Ben, you know, talking to yourself, you know, I can, obviously the inspiration being from the prompt, but, you know, there's so many demons in this first section. You know, are you still telling stories to strangers in the streets, or has anxiety finally killed the make-believe, you know, to acknowledge like this battle with anxiety, you know, did you ever say what you wanted to say? You know, or are you still grieving? Are you still empty? Are you done dying? You know, there's so many dark notes or the first stanza, and the things he has to say to himself are kind of buried in this present mindset of weakness, you know. It has like some trappings of being hopeful, but it's the kind of hopeful you feel when you're depressed. You know, will this ever end? You know, is there a light at the end of the tunnel? Will things get better? You know, it's not there. It's positivity that's like cloaked. It's really negativity that's cloaked in positivity. You know, and it's such a bleak intro. And then you get to the second part, you know, Sam, which is like an inner persona, you know, or a person, you know, that is the younger version, you know, was more present to the younger version, is what I take it as. Could be someone who's not around anymore, you know, it could be someone who actually died, or it could be an inner child, you know, it's kind of hard to say, but to be addressed to someone that you don't talk about, you know, that you don't share an aspect of self or a memory of someone that just doesn't get discussed because it's too painful, you know. And I should have gotten help at 14 when I still had time to dream and save ourselves from what happened next. And I should have gone to bed at 2 a.m. instead of staying up with you comparing bruises and who left them, you know. That one in particular just makes me think it's probably someone external, you know, a friend who was going through similar pain, and nobody ever said anything, and now, you know, it just gets kind of blocked out, you know, memories you don't discuss, you know, which I can relate to a lot. I grew up in a, you know, a trailer park. And I had a lot of friends that were in crappy situations. And I can't tell you how many times I justified my own situation by saying, well, you know, at least I don't get beat when I get home. You know, at least I'm not being molested. At least, you know, like, those are some pretty sad at least, you know. But, you know, it was weird because that's just how it was. You know, people talked about what was children talked about. You know, the crappy things they had at home. There was, like, camaraderie in that, but then there was also, like, feeling better about your own situation because it's not as bad as someone else's, which, not great. Kids do weird things to survive. You know, and then Canary, which is a reference to, like, canary in a coal mine. You know, the alarm, the sign of something being wrong. You know, but also it's a bird that can take flight. You know, the boy that died the day they laid her in the reeds, it's all right if that's what you needed, but it's time to go, you know. So, like, this is the wake-up call. Eagle, dare to dream. This is the life, find your freedom. You know, it's both, like, a wish that your friend's in a better place, but also, like, hey, we can do better. This is a dark piece. It plays with, like, depression and abuse and hope in interesting ways. I really enjoyed it. Afisiana, what did you think?
I think he played it sort of like in High Run, where it's two personalities within the same person talking to each other, whereas I think Ben is kind of the stable one. So the one who's saying, hi, Ben, or hello, Ben, is the kind of mocking voice, the dark side of him addressing Ben, kind of calling him out on his grief and his anxiety and, like, pointing out all his flaws and, like, are you still putting us, like, on this merry-go-round, this carousel of we go around and round and have to go through the same thing again, and kind of being frustrated because this one who is talking there is the one who's kind of trapped inside. And I'm thinking that's Sam because then it seems like Ben is addressing Sam. And Sam has been repressed. So the I am your keeper and I keep you to myself, I feel like that means Sam is just like the voice in the back of his head. He doesn't let him out. He doesn't let him take control anymore. And he doesn't tell anyone about it because, you know, he doesn't want to feel judged for having this other side of him, or the perhaps things that he hears. I should have gotten help at 14 when I still had time to dream. And it's like he recognizes that he's unwell and that he could have. And I'm saying this as a character, not saying that Ben is actually in this situation, that he should have gotten help and he should have focused on other things and gone to bed instead of kind of living within his mind with all of this. And I hated that for all of yours. That would be me, because I serve a mean muse and her name is Misery. I love that, the idea of like Misery being your muse, but to keep on having the inspiration, you kind of give in to that misery. And then the canary, I do think it's referencing the canary in the coal mine, coal mine, like you were talking about, Babbler. And I think that might have been kind of the inner child, the innocent side of person. And that died early on when the girl died, is when they laid her in the reeds. And the loss of whoever this girl is kind of killed the innocent side of this person. And then now it's like, you know, reclaim your life. Take back your 20s. Go really live now. Don't die like this part of yourself. Go on. This is just a fascinating piece, and it gives a few different perspectives. I feel like he really got the vibe of the video prompt. It has a similar kind of feel to it.
I like that interpretation. Well, like I said, I was kind of going back and forth when I was reading it. You know, I could definitely see that too, the inner child and the inner voices as well. Great comments. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I really like this all the way through. It's a wonderful vignette broken down into the three parts of oneself. You know, and the trying to learn to love and embrace yourself and the struggles that come from it. I like how there is that feeling of hope. Within the end lines, eagle dare to dream, this is the life, find your freedom. I like that the canary, it makes me think of the canary in the coal mine that would stop singing and would be an indication that they were running out of oxygen. You know, and it feels like the idea of that bird within oneself that stops singing. And then you feel that sense of self dying. I really like, and are you done dying, or will we ask the operator of this dysphoric carousel to swing us round again? You know, I have to agree, there's a very mocking tone to that. And the idea of trying to make up your mind on who and what you are and trying to paint the full picture of yourself. So wonderful lines and very well done.
Great comment, Pam.
Wonderful. Sorry, I had myself on mute. Talk to myself. Yeah, no. Agreed. I thought it was a really beautiful piece. The who you know, finding yourself or maybe selves or understanding that there's different aspects of yourself. I thought it was a really great, wonderful comment. What do we have up next, Theasiana?
Our next poem to the same prompt is by Jenny the Deep. It's called Can't Help Anyone Without Healing Myself First. Sorry I can't free you right now from this mental cage you are imprisoned in. I'm also trapped, trying to free myself from it. Weighed down, hard to breathe, mowed down, friction burning bridges, pushing others away, walking on eggshells while trying not to crack, is nearly impossible, like making depression less. You can't force gravity. It never will let you escape. Revolved around you, I always am, true. I need to help myself before I can help you heal. My brain is not normal. My lack of serotonin is unreal. Once I am stable, maybe I'll be able to help you too. Mental illness is not a joke. Living with depression and anxiety is a daily battle for many not to take lightly. Standing on the edge, it only takes one poke. End pull.
Great read, Faziana. For some reason, it didn't pop up for me, and my computer's super slow, so I had to go hunt it down. So, Pam, would you mind sharing your thoughts first while I hunt down the piece?
Yeah, well, I'll try my best, because I'll admit it didn't pop up for me either. But I was
sorry
listening.
About that. I didn't press
okay. Send. Been there, done that.
Okay.
But, yeah, you know, this is a real strong write on the importance of acknowledging what it's like to struggle with mental illness and to acknowledge that, you know, this is a problem that people have and that this a struggle that they deal with. I really like how the end line says, mental illness is not a joke. Living with depression and anxiety is a daily battle for many not to take lightly. Standing on the edge, it only takes one poke. That line, it only takes one poke, reminds us of how important it is to be nice to people, to be kind to people, because you don't know what they're going through. I also like how she takes some wonderful cliche phrases like burning bridges and walking on eggshells while trying not to crack, and presents them in a new way that's fresh in its feelings. You know, too often times when you're dealing with mental illness, when you're dealing with depression and anxiety, you always feel like your own worst enemy, and you feel like everything you're going to say is going to push friends away. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Yeah, excellent comment, Pam. I agree. You know, reading this piece, you can't. You know, if you're not in a good place, you can't help other people. Like, because you can't help yourself, you know. I mean, you can, but only to a point. You know, there's a cost to that. I think people who, you know, are really empathetic, people who really care about other people, often give themselves too much away and cause damage to themselves. And sometimes there has to be a learning curve for that, you know, how much to give and know where your own breaking point is, you know. It's hard, too. You know, I know that when I'm depressed, I definitely feel for other people's depression, but I can't do much for them because, like, I can hardly do anything for myself. So, you know, you can't fill a glass with an empty pitcher. So I think there's a really strong point to this, you know, not being able to help someone else until you've helped yourself. I love some of the phrasing in here, too, the way that it's described. I liked, you know, walking on eggshells while trying not to crack, you know, barely holding it together yourself, you know, being like a near broken egg, walking on other broken eggs, you know, trying not to break them further, you know. It's like maybe this isn't the time to be traversing, you know, places, eggshells, There's really good ones in here. You know, sorry I can't for you right now from the mental cage you're imprisoned in. I enjoyed it. I thought it was well done. So, wonderful write from Jenny. Faziana, what did you think?
I agree with everything both of you said. I liked the eggshell part too, because usually you're trying not to break the eggshells, but here, trying not to break yourself. while walking on those eggshells, because eggshells can also be sharp, and you're going to sometimes hurt yourself as you try to avoid hurting others. It's complicated. And it is like that thing where, you know, in case of a plane crash, put your own oxygen mask on before helping someone else. And sometimes you need to keep yourself afloat so you're able to help someone once you're stable. Because if you go down, then you both go down if you're the one holding them up. I like the last line a lot, standing on the edge, if only it takes one poke, because it really does. Sometimes when a lot of bad things have happened, or you're really going through a lot and you're mentally unstable, one little thing can set you over the edge. It little things add up, and you never know what is going to be that thing. So like Pam said, consider that you don't know what someone's going through, and try to be kind. You don't want to be that last thing that knocks them over the edge. Yeah, very well done. Thank you, Jenny. And now we have one by Vicki Moore. And Babbler, I believe it's your turn to read.
All righty. This is Voices in My Head by Vicki Moore. There's always chaos in my head. I sometimes wish that I were dead. Voices talking, people walking, not in my ears, but in my fears. I rush around to drown the sounds. It never works. I'm just a jerk, a loser, a waste of space. I need to get out of this place. Pills, pills, pills. I take them to cure my ills, to kill the evil voices, but it seems I have no choices. Chaos runs my life, and I've got no strength to fight. The doctors try to cure me, but I know they just endure me. My brain keeps rattling with the evil I'm battling. No end in sight. The voices are right. I should just kill myself. I really don't want to die. These thoughts are just a lie. No more medicine. I'm done with the sedatives. I've talked to the voices, told them I have choices. Acceptance is my chance to end this frightening dance. I found my peace. The voices ceased. I know just how to silence them now until they come back. End poem.
Great read. You had a nice rhythm to that read, and I think that's at least partly because Vicki had a good rhythm when writing. It had a good cadence to it. I really like the, where is it now? But it seems I have no choices. And that's often where people have their breaking point, is if they feel like there are no options, if there's no way out of their situation, whatever it is, not having choices is very frightening. And I really liked the part about the doctors. I know they just endure me. And it can really feel like that with doctors sometimes. It's like you go in with a whole bunch of questions and they're just like, just, I don't know, very clearly not happy to be there, and they're just kind of tolerating you because you're seen as like a lost cause. I feel like I've had some doctors like that, both for physical issues and for mental health things, and it's really hard when you can see that, and especially if like this person has a lot of doubts, thinking that people don't like them, they're naturally kind of assuming that that's how people feel. And when you're thinking that, a small response from someone can feel like amplified, and you take it as a very deep rejection. And then there's the thing about the choices again, but I told them I have choices. There's that defiance against the feeling of being trapped. And I like the confidence of, you know, made them quiet, and there's silence, but then there's that last line that gets you, and it recognizes that it's probably not over until they come back. And unfortunately, with mental health, that's often a thing. It's like you're almost like in remission, but there's a big risk that you're going to relapse into your issues, especially if now off the medication, sounds like. And that's the thing. Sometimes it's like you feel better for a while, so you're like, I don't need the medicine. And then when you're not on it, you're not so good. So it's an intense subject that I've brought to us tonight. So I think all the poems are going to be pretty intense.
Yeah, this is a pretty intense one. It felt very rhythmic to me while I was reading it, you know. And it almost felt like lyrics in a way. Like, I wish I could hear, like, the backing that doesn't exist, you know. You know, to me, I hear, you know, someone who's struggling with a mental illness, and they've been put on medication, and the medication is just frustrating. You know, it doesn't seem to be helping much. It doesn't seem to be making things better. And so they've found another way to make themselves functional, at least for the time being, without medication, which can be a really dangerous tack. You know, it can work for some people and then it won't work for other people. Like, you have to really know, like, what are your demons? You know, I'm definitely someone who, you know, as someone with bipolar, that doesn't like to take medication. I don't like to take medication because I feel I get dissociative on antidepressants. I completely dissociate. It's really kind of dangerous because I don't really – it's like I'm watching myself live my life, so every emotion I have feels fake. I don't know how to describe it. If you haven't experienced it, I don't know how to describe it. Like living outside yourself, and so you'll do wild and kind of insane things because it just doesn't feel real. You know, like how in a video game you might crash a car into a wall just to see what happens. Don't want to do that when it's like your actual life, you know. but you still feel dissociated from the risk in that way. But that doesn't mean I never need medication. You know, I have to really keep a close eye on myself and watch how I'm doing. But I also am bipolar type 2, so it's not as extreme, you know. You have to know yourself. For a lot of people, getting off your medication can be a really dangerous thing to do. I remember seeing a T-shirt once that said, if you're happy and you know it, it's the meds, which made me laugh. but I really like the piece, you know, dealing with this intense, this feelings, you know, and trying to figure out how to make the best out of a bad situation, you know, when it feels like the medications aren't helping and your mental illness is still a problem. You know, how do you find a coping mechanism that works? You know, how do you find that in between of where you can be happy, where you can be content, where you can be functional? You know, it's a real tight wire walk. So I enjoyed this writing. I thought it was very well done. Pam, what did you think?
You know what? I think you had some great words of wisdom there, that it is up to the you really have to pay attention to yourself, and it is the individual person, you know. And like for me with my depression, I definitely stay on my medicine because I know from my history that I will get to such an extreme low, you know, that it's not possible for me to function without my medication. The one medicine I ever went off of was the stuff they started me on for my narcolepsy that was supposed to help with the tiredness, the extreme tiredness that you get with narcolepsy. And I went off that because I had the side effect of paranoia where all of a sudden I thought people were out to kill me. It was the like the scariest side effect I had ever dealt with. So, yeah, it is important to pay attention to yourself. I really like this first-person narrative and how it's from the point of view of somebody who's dealing with mental illness and dealing with almost what seems like a paranoid state of mind. I did like the repetition of pills, pills, pills. You know, it almost has a sing-song-like quality that seems almost insane or, you know, in its presentation because, and it works so well with the voice, with the chaotic voice of this person who is in their own mind. And it's a powerful write on self-doubt and a look at somebody who's trying to figure out what's best for them and what's best for their life and being bombarded by so many other people's opinions, including doctors. So excellent write and very well done.
Yes, know thyself and what the risks are. Yeah, it's interesting how different people have different things. And I agree, the rhythm of this piece does feel almost a little bit like manic, you know, in the rhythm of it. Pills, pills, pills. You know, everyone's got an opinion, right? Wonderful comments, Pam. Ephesiana, what did you think? Did you already do yours? I don't remember.
I already commented.
Yeah, I'm like, actually, I think you went first.
Yeah. You're making me question myself. I'm like, did I just say that to myself? No, I'm pretty sure I talked.
No, yeah. I'm just so distracted. Like, my computer is so slow. It's, like, painful. I go to move something, and it takes a really long time. And every page takes a really long time to load. And so I'm like, oh, what am I doing? So I apologize if I seem a little distracted.
That's okay. Pam, I believe it's your turn to read, and there's one by Darkened Auras.
All right. There we go. We Saved You by Darkened Auras. You can't just throw us away. We suffer for you every day. You know you only survive because we're alive. You created us in this way. We hold all the bane while you block out the pain, living unaware of the deep despair. And now you treat us like a stain. You no longer need us. No, don't want us around to show. We have feelings too. We're a form of you. Why should we have to go? We saved you from reality, locked away memories. We were the key we never wanted to exist. But since your brain had to insist, we now just want to live somewhat free. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I really enjoyed this. Right. It's like the internal voices are defensive, you know. They were developed as a defense mechanism for, you know, some kind of trauma. You know, you can't just throw us away. We suffer for you every day. You know, you only survive because we're alive. You created us in this way. You know, so to have these other aspects of your personality created as a defense mechanism for something, and now you've recovered and you no longer need them, you know, they feel rejection, you know, like they've become their own people in a way. So I really love this, the idea that they're defensive, you know, because it's true. Just because trauma is over doesn't mean you're recovered. It doesn't mean, you like, your defense mechanisms stop working. The things that you use to cope with tough situations. So the idea of them digging their heels in to stay, you know, you no longer need us? No. Don't want us around to show we have feelings too. We're a form of you. Why should we have to go? You know, the dig in, the internal battle to, you know, to stop you know, enacting these coping mechanisms that you don't need anymore, and the, how hard it is to break a habit, or perhaps even like a multiple personality disorder or actual internal voices. You know, you could read it in multiple levels, but the idea of, you know, the them defending themselves, I really like. It was well done. Ephesiana, what'd you think?
I really liked it too. And I did see it as kind of the alters, the personalities that come out, not as the dominant one, but as the kind of defense mechanisms, like you were saying, defense mechanisms sometimes aren't needed anymore. You're maybe in a safer place. You don't have the trauma continuing. So it's you don't need that side of you anymore, that part of you that came out before when you were in trouble. But sometimes when you're in a more stable life later, your defense mechanisms, this side of you, can be destructive to normal life, because maybe that part of you is too aggressive or too defensive or, you know, whatever, and it's not applicable to the situation you're in anymore. So you're trying to get rid of it, and there's that little piece of you that's like, no, hang on to what they had, because they're losing the driver's seat completely, and I imagine that's a frightening feeling.
Yeah, the sense of abandonment. yeah, and definitely it would apply for like actual multiple personality disorder as well. Wonderful comment, Fiziana. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought this had great rhyme and flow, wonderful imagery. And I do like how it's about that more negative parts of ourselves that you know, refuse to let go no matter how much we try to push them away. I like the emphasis and the no that she has. You no longer need us, and the no, you don't want us around. You don't want us around to show we have feelings too. We're a form of you. Why should we have to go? And then we saved you from reality, locked away memories. We were the key. That really speaks on the idea how oftentimes when people go through traumatic events and you know, like multiple personality disorders or dissociative disorders are developed, and when there's that healing that comes about, and you don't want to let that part of yourself go. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, wonderful comment, Pam. Where are we off to?
Now we have one by Eski, and I'll give that a read. Atrophy's halo, conscience fucked off, omniscience blocked off, hand held, mind melt, Molotov, frigid chill scream, reoccurring bad dream, let fraying at the seams. I can see them now, their faces all around, rising from the ground. Their hands all over me. They put the color in my eyes, left me hollow and anesthetized, entitled me with butterflies, enticed me with butterflies, while instinct flayed me. Are you the is in my disguise? The kosh that keeps me paralyzed? An ocean in the skies? Or the God that found me? Because Jesus can't look at me now, after I fucked his sacred cow. My shadow is chasing me down, and my feet are burning. Barbed wire, castrations in terminal isolation, the horns of rumination. The bull that gored me, stitched together with nylon thread. I sought sanctuary within my head, not knowing I was already dead. As oblivion drowned me, a lung busting ascent, from the deepest, darkest descent, an existence already spent under atrophy's halo. End poem.
Great read, Ephesiana. I really loved this piece. The rhymes are wonderful, and the cadence of it, too. There's the rhyme, but then there's also just the way the words flow are really well done. And then just the agony of it, you know, conscience fucked off, omniscience blocked off, handheld, mind meld, Molotov, you know, just this internal pain, you know, this rift, it's smacks of suffering, and it's really well done, just this falling apart mentally. You know, I can see them now, their faces all around, rising from the ground, their hands all over me. They put the color in my eyes, left me hollow and anesthetized, enticed me with butterflies, you know, to be lured in by your own, like, fracturing sanity. And then to question everything, you know, like, you know, are we okay? You know, even you know, how acerbic it is to be like, because Jesus can't look at me now after I fucked his sacred cow. My shadow is chasing me down, you know, to just be like, I'm not, you know, like, I'm unstable. Like, I've done atrocious things. And to just be lost to the horror of that. And to be gored by the bull. I think this is just a beautiful, beautifully painful piece. That the structure of it is very well done, you know, to then try to save yourself when you feel like you're already too gone. I thought sanctuary within my head, not knowing I was already dead, you know, to be basically dead to the world, like lost, have your own sanity locked up in your own mind, a lung-busting descent, you know, deepest, darkest descent, an existence already spent under atrophy's halo, you know, to try and recover from something that's more or less unrecoverable. I really enjoyed it, you know, just this mental fracturing. It's definitely a darker piece, but I absolutely love the rhythm and rhyme of it. It's very well composed. Pam, what did you think?
Definitely a dark and haunting rite, a powerful imagery and metaphors, a strong look at the idea of having that mental breakdown, and feeling like nobody cares and therefore you no longer care. You know, I really like barbed wire castration and terminal isolation, the horns of rumination, the bull that gored me, stitched together with nylon thread. I sought sanctuary within my head, not knowing I was already dead. There's such a feeling of helplessness within those lines, and such a feeling of anger. So excellent write and very well done.
Now, there's a lot of anger and anguish in this piece. It is really dark, but well done. Louisiana, your thoughts?
I really liked how chaotic this was. You know, it has a sense to it for sure, because it has, like, the rhyme and the structure is not so chaotic, but there's the way that the ideas jump around and the images of, like, the faces coming out of the ground and things like that, it really gives you that sense of madness where it almost makes me, like, afraid. Like, I have that feeling, like, you know, when you're, like, walking to the outhouse when you're camping, and it's, like, that going through the dark, and your mind is saying, like, it's fine. It's just the same forest I was in, like, 2 minutes ago. But there's a, like, kind of, like, chill up your back, like, ooh. I have this feeling in this because it's, like, it makes me feel like I'm losing my mind. And I mean that as a compliment, because reading the way that it's talking, just feels like you're in the head of the person who is not well and who is, you know, afraid themselves. I feel like it really put me into that. I like the part where it says, in terminal isolation, the horns of rumination, the bull that gored me. So the horns of rumination, it's like the bull that is goring is not an external force. It is their own thoughts. It's the dangers of thinking, of ruminating on something. That's how you hurt yourself in this. To see it as a barbed wire castration, it's like you're cutting off important pieces of yourself with these frightening thoughts, with this negativity that's overpowering within, as oblivion drowned me, kind of get lost into nothingness. And I mean, that's the thing about depression, is it's not just feeling sad. Sometimes it's not feeling anything at all. It's just that numbness, and being drowned in oblivion sounds a lot like that. It's very dark, and I think that's appropriate for this contest. So well done. Did I read that?
Did I read it? Man, my mind is somewhere else today. I think you read it. Yes, you read it.
Yeah. Okay. none of us are quite here. Well, maybe Pam is. So if I read that one,
yeah,
then Babbler, it's your turn. What does it mean when Pam is the sane one? It means that Aphasiana and Babbler are here. sorry to lump you in with me, Babbler. I'm going to get you, Babbler, to read the one by Stephen T. Wellman, please.
Alrighty. This is Bleeding by Stephen T. Wellman. There's snow on the moon. Gray is white. White is gray. Ashes in my heart. Cold is hot. There is no way to bridge the distance between us. Clouds in my head. Head in the clouds. Mental wounds healing, revealing my dark side. I must embrace it. It is time I faced it. Hoping others will too, without complete understanding. The sunset bleeds blue. The sunset bleeds red. Life bleeding in my hands once again. End poem.
Excellent read, Babbler. And interesting, well done poem, as always, from Stephen. I like the part that says clouds in my head and head in the clouds, because I've felt both of those things quite regularly, but they're very different. Clouds in my head, it's like that fogginess where you can't quite think, and you have trouble focusing, whereas head in the clouds, your imagination is going wild. You have lots of ideas, but you kind of forget about where you are. you're not so focused in the moment. And there are two very different ways of not paying attention to what's around you. But I like that because it also is talking about other contrasts. You know, the cold is hot and hot is cold. Well, I think the clouds are kind of like that. You know, clouds in both instances, but very different ways of the clouds being in your mind. And for some reason, I really like the concept of snow on the moon. I don't know why, but it's just interesting to picture. Where is it now? And then the sunset as bleeding color, and then feeling it in your hands. And that once again at the end kind of tells us that it's cyclical. You go through this over and over again. And that's maybe why the moon is involved, because, you know, the moon gets bigger or smaller throughout the month, and it changes, but it always ends up coming back as being the big, bright version of itself, and sometimes maybe your mental state can be in a cycle like that. Sometimes it has its dark sides, those nights where you don't have any light, and sometimes you're at your brightest. I don't know, that's just where my mind went. I don't totally know if that is on track with what he's thinking, but I really enjoyed the poem in any case.
I like what you were saying about the moon. I think that's an interesting perspective on this, you know. I just thought when I was reading it, you know, it's about pain and feeling confused and all mixed up is kind of how I took it. You know, there's snow on the moon, meaning there's water on the moon. There's maybe tears or anguish in a place that's typically dry, you know, that doesn't have water, you know. Gray is white and white is gray. Like nothing seems clear. Nothing seems pure. You know, hot is cold and cold is hot. I mean, that line made me think of, you know, when you get so cold that you touch something hot that it's then like too hot, like and vice versa, you know, like if you've been out for the snow too long and then you go into a hot tub, you know, it's just all too much, you know, it's like sensory overload. At least, I don't know. I experienced that anyway. I guess I've never really asked whether people experience that. I just kind of assumed that they do. You know, and trying to find, you know, the way back to that. I did also really like that line, clouds in my head and head in the clouds. You know, head in the clouds being dreamy and daydreamy, and clouds in my head being, like, perturbed, you know, to be having issues, you know. I can't think of the word that I want to find for that, but, you know, to be weighed down and bothered, you know. Mental wounds healing, revealing my dark side, you know, which is so true. You do have to embrace the less good things about yourself in order to heal. You know, you have to address those things. It's part of reflection. Nobody's perfect. Nobody. So, you know, you do have flaws. Everyone has flaws. I have flaws. And in order to, like, improve yourself and become better and to heal things, you have to look at the things that you can do yourself, because it turns out that's the only person you actually have any modicum of control over. Like, your problems can't be all external. In fact, you know, your mental state really isn't. And, you know, that's like the one thing that you can control is how you react to things. You know, I do like the hoping others will too, without complete understanding, you know, hoping that other people can accept you for who you actually are, even if they don't totally understand it. I thought that couplet was really well done and important. You know, I really liked this. I thought that it was well done and showed nice conflict. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought this had amazing imagery and metaphors and strong lines. I really like how it speaks on healing and how a time of healing can be an extremely confusing time, you know, and while we try to understand the both sides of ourselves, including the darker side, mental wounds healing, revealing my dark side, I must embrace it. It is time I faced it. I particularly like those lines because they do speak on what it's like to stand in front of a mirror, and not a physical mirror, but a metaphorical mirror, and look at take a deep look at ourselves and see what we are made of and what we are going to become. So excellent write and very well done.
I like the way you phrased that, you know, like the pain of healing and the confusion of it. Great observation. Where to next with Eviana?
Now we have one by Vamped Vixen. I know we had read one by her earlier, but that was for the other contest. Pam, I think it's your turn to read.
All right. Splitting Myself by Vamped Vixen. Whiskey on my breath, sweet static, white noise distraction. Tonight's a trip away from myself. A clock or ticking bomb, counting seconds down till I'm drafted to the front lines, marching my battles inside again. Lines for a Dear John letter, writing poetic odes to what's leaking out of me. I split myself from my mirrored self, and from myself I split, shattering glass into jagged edges, punching the only devil that I see. Doctor with a rusty kitchen knife, my bedroom and operating room for this amputee, slicing out parts they never liked, pieces hidden I'll never let them see. My laugh falters, tripping home, voices screaming, this is why we don't go to parties anymore. Should have stayed home, saved your money. The only best friend you'll ever need is the mouse crawling in your brain, snickering, because it won't stay in its lane. So joke, drink a toast, clink wine glasses to everything they all wanted me to be, till I'm home, digging Judas out of my wrist, piece by piece, carving marble into gilded effigy so they invite it to their next party. But my mocking jester, playing tricks within, says it's okay their God doesn't smile on me, with Satan coiled round my neck. How could I ever truly be alone? End poem.
Great read, Pam. And wow, this is a really dark write, but it's really well done. You know, the story of basically of someone who's kind of relapsed in their mental health is how I take it. You know, whiskey on my breath, sweet static, white noise distraction. Tonight's a trip away from myself, you know, to go out and go drinking, to go to a party, to, you know, expose yourself. You know, a clock or ticking time bomb counting seconds down till I'm drafted to join the front lines, marching my battles inside again, you know, to go out to try to have fun, to try to socialize and come back and have to deal with the mental turmoil, you know, to basically put on different faces for different situations, to not acknowledge that, you know, I've certainly done it, you know, when I'm not mentally well, you know, I still go to work every day. I still, you know, have social interactions. I still have to, you know, deal with customers and phone calls and all that great stuff. I can't, you know, as unhealthy as I feel at work. So I totally relate to that. You know, and then to come back into this place of mental turmoil and be worse for having gone out, and, you know, and to doctor with a rusty kitchen knife, my bedroom, an operating room for this amputee, you know, to engage in, like, self-harm, do this mental illness and kind of lose yourself in that. You know, this is why we don't go to parties anymore, you know, because you have to pretend to be okay, and that itself can be harmful. And then to not feel accepted and not feel embraced in those situations, because you can't be whole yourself because you're not okay. you know, and to see the joke of it, there's like this overarching, like really bitter, acerbic, mocking tone, that, you know, overarches this piece, that again has like that manic, angry voice, but also of pain, you know, subtext being of pain and self-doubt and self-worth, yourself for that. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was really well done. It says, too, in the footnote here, in the author's note, the exact quote that came from, you know, the "you think you can amputate me," And I think it really does a great job at getting at that through the self-harm. I particularly thought the line, digging Judas out of my wrist piece by piece, was particularly dark, but effective, but almost gave me, like, the heebie-jeebies reading it. So, very well done. Afiziana, your thoughts?
This is amazing. I really, really like it. It's definitely going to be a finalist. I really like tonight's a trip away from myself. And I think that's why a lot of people give in to addiction, whether it's drinking or drugs or, you know, casual sex or, like, just some kind of stimulus that helps give them a vacation from their regular self, tries to make it so they're not thinking, they don't have to deal with their own thoughts. And the whiskey on my breath shows that this is someone who's drinking away their troubles, or trying to have a break from their own thoughts. And I really liked writing poetic odes to what's leaking out of me. So it's like, because it's an ode, it's like you're almost like complimenting and acknowledging and celebrating those pieces of you that are not so great. To what's leaking out of me is probably, like, you know, tears and all kinds of things related to bad feelings. Then the operating room for this amputee, again, I'm glad that you pointed out what part that was referring to in the song. That was the prompt. And I really actually enjoyed that part of the song, so I'm glad that it quoted that, because the one personality is like, you want to kill me, you want to cut me out of yourself, and is very accusing of that. And here, this person, the character who Vamped Fixin is creating here, wants to slice out negative parts of themselves. And I think that's something that people who self-harm may be able to relate to. I know there's different reasons that different people do it, but I've definitely, I've struggled with it as well, and sometimes you want to be able to cut out the parts of you that you don't like, and it's not so much in a physical way, although sometimes I want to, like, cut off gross parts of myself, just fat and things, but no, it mostly is about, like, trying to be free of yourself, to feel something, but to get rid of that negativity, and it's like release the pressure and get rid of the toxic part of you, which you can't do, doesn't work. But I like the way that it's described here. I feel like it has that kind of energy where she gets it, and that part that you pointed out, the Judas, digging Judas out of my wrist piece by piece, Judas, of course, being the apostle who betrayed Jesus, and it's like that part of you that betrays you, or maybe that made you betray other people. But I think it's more about betraying yourself and trying to get rid of that. And the fact that it's a wrist that's being self-harmed makes it seem like it's possibly suicidal. And that's just, you know, obviously a very dark piece. But carving marble into gilded effigy, I really like, because if you're super pale, or I don't know, maybe not necessarily super pale, but that's what I'm picturing, your skin can be that marble. And, you know, your veins make the marble design, and that's what they're attacking in those wrists, and it becomes something else as you do that. lost myself. anyway, this is a really dark but really powerful piece, and I think she really dug into the prompt and made that part come alive. Thank you, Vamped Vixen, for sharing.
Really wonderful comments in there, Fabiana. Yeah, I liked that marble line, too. I also first thought of, like, really pale skin, but then I thought of maybe someone who has a really hardened exterior, you know, who can really only cut themselves and not be cut by other people. Just a thought I had. But anyway, Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is an amazing write. Brilliant imagery and metaphors, strong emotive lines. I really like how it deals with the anxiety and the depression and the idea of wanting to get away from yourself. The imagery was particularly visceral. A doctor with a rusty kitchen knife, my bedroom and operating room for this amputee, slicing out parts they never liked. It's really a strong write on the idea of, you know, wanting to escape from yourself. I also really like the ending with where it says, with Satan snakeskin coil around my neck, how could I ever truly be alone? You know, that weight of knowing that darker side of yourself just never seems to want to let go. So excellent write and very well done.
I thought an excellent piece, just very, I don't know, very emotive, the idea of cutting yourself apart. Fabiana, where are we off to?
Now we have one by Blue Leader One, untitled 187. I am red, red, red. I said, but I'm not dead. I'm not Fred. Or am I? Don't know. I have a red hand that I shout into. Red-handed, red rage, red con, red zone, recon rabid, ready killer. Or am I? Don't know. Red-hot skies I melt into. Red skies at night I promise to. Red skirts and bubblegum, so yummy, so much fun for my tum-tum-tum-tummy-tum. End poem.
Great read, Fabiana. I'm just weirded out here because I'm having, like, serious deja vu. Like, I feel like I've read this piece before, but the date on it is May 3rd, so I couldn't have because I feel like I read it, like, months ago. I don't know. My brain is in a weird place. But for me, this was very stream of conscious. You know, and that kind of crazed feeling. It almost reminds me, you know, of this scene from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory when they're in the canoe, you know, the rowers keep on rowing. Just that kind of high energy madness, you know, where you're losing it and things just seem vaguely related, you know. I am red, 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 I said, but I'm not dead, you know, really focusing on this repetition and then not even being sure about it, you know, wait, is that, does what I say make sense, you know, to be red-handed, red rage, red con, you know, this repetition of red and how it seems like almost blinding, you know, red-hot skies I melt into, red skies at night I promise to, red skirts and bubblegum, you know, and then it just gets lost in this almost infantile madness with the bubblegum and the tummy. And it's really interesting, you know, it's that chaotic kind of mad. It's very interesting, like, yeah, just high energy, borderline insanity. You know, I can almost picture the straitjacket. Very interesting write for Blue Leader One. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I like the sense of chaos in this with the repetition of red and its different applications. It feels very insane, very dark, a strong look at the idea of how red can present itself in many forms. And there's you feel like you just see the blood flowing as you're reading this poem. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Yeah, madness. Wonderful comment, Tim. Abiziana, your thoughts?
It was fun to read, to be the reader out loud, because it had the repetition, and it's spaced in a way that makes it easy to know the pauses. I kind of thought it missed an opportunity to play on the homonyms, like red as in reading would have been good to get in there somewhere. I was expecting it to kind of play with that. I like that it questions itself. Or am I? Don't know. I like that part happened twice, because that's part of when you feel like you're losing it, you question yourself. And I really like having that included here. I liked the red, where is it now? Red skies at night, I promise, too, because there's that saying, it's like, red sky at night, sailor's delight, red sky in the morning, sailor's warning, or something like that. I can't remember which one was which. And it's like the red sky is promising it's going to be good or it's going to be bad, whatever one is at night. I feel like it's a reference to that saying. And then it does just kind of go into the tum-tum, tummy-tum, which was kind of like, An odd kind of, like you said, Babbler, juvenile moment. It's like it's a regression. And then when I laughed at the end, I wasn't laughing. I was actually reading because it says, ha, in case that wasn't clear. It was part of the poem. I know I laugh a lot randomly because I have kind of a weird sense of humor and also nervous laughter. So if you're used to me laughing ridiculously, I do, but that was on purpose right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess if you're reading along, you can tell that laughter at the end is typed in. But you did a very good job of laughing while reading. So, well done. Great read. Where are we off to, Feziana?
We are next going to one by Weaver of Dreams. And if I read that, then Babbler, can you please read the one by Weaver?
Absolutely. This is Voices by Weaver of Dreams. There is no hate, no debate between me and thee. There is a dome of indifference, muffled, and damped down, voices seem to be drowned, forced to keep a safe distance. I must avoid intrusive, often impertinent questions that are often posed when anyone knows I have mental health issues. They seem to feel that gives them the right to probe for insight. Unless you have awakened to hear, sharp and clear, whispered ideas so vile that you must fight the urge to do unthinkable harm that does not raise an alarm, you can't ever know what might emerge. End poem.
Great read, Babbler. You had some good dramatic pauses at just the right spots. I really liked the "I must avoid intrusive, often impertinent questions." It's not too often I hear impertinent, so I really enjoyed that being included here. At first, when I heard intrusive, I was thinking intrusive thoughts, like the kind of questions you ask yourself. But here it's talking about people who are nosy and that definitely happens. You know, if people know that you have some issues and they are curious about it, even if sometimes you've been open about it, and so people use you as an example, it's like, oh, if I'm learning about this, then I need to ask that person about it. And sometimes you feel up to it, and sometimes you don't want to be someone's lesson, because it can be exhausting, and also it can be embarrassing, because there is still stigma about mental health. As much as, you know, awareness is a big campaign for things, and I think people are more accepting than in the past, there are still some conditions that definitely face a lot of stigma. I'm sorry, I'm yawning. There's nothing against the poem. I'm just sleepy. And whispered ideas, so vile. And that's the thing, is when you have some mental illness, you're not too stable to start with. And then to have people whispering about you because of your mental illness, that could spark some violent urges, which can be frightening. And I definitely see that at work. We have, you know, I work in a public library, and people who don't really have anywhere else to go often hang out, even if they're not using us as a library. And also we're a free source of internet and computer access for people who don't have any money to have their own. So we end up having a fairly large population of people who are diversely abled mentally, and we have a few regulars who talk to themselves quite a bit, and mostly they're harmless, but if someone makes fun of them for talking to themselves, then they can get very aggressive, and I'm sure that they've been bullied a lot for their condition, and sometimes they are pretty disruptive in their conversations with themselves, so people get mad, and you don't necessarily want to approach them about what they're doing, because they're very defensive about their mental health, and it's that last stanza really made me think about that defensiveness when you hear someone talking about your mental health. Although it could also be about the paranoia, because sometimes your mental health makes you think people are talking about you when they're really not. So it's pretty complicated. And Weaver was very thoughtful, because she commented to me earlier today that she was writing from an outside perspective, that is not something she had personal experience with. So she was like, is it okay that I'm writing to this? I don't want it to, you know, be unfair to people who do struggle with mental health. But I think that she was respectful in this. So I said, yes, you can definitely be included. But I thought that was very respectful of her to question whether she could write without having personal connection to it. So I appreciated that.
Yeah, I like what you were saying about, especially about people who have these sorts of mental health struggles. You know, a lot of times they are perfectly content to speak with themselves until they feel mocked. Yeah, I mean, and rightly so, you know, to be defensive in this situation. Excellent comment. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is a great write. I like that she put a lot of thought into this and how she would word it. Wonderful imagery. And it's true, you know, it does get overwhelming to be asked, you know, constant questions when people feel like you're the go-to person for any particular issue. Great first-person narrative. I really like the one-word title, voices, because it's not only the voices within yourself, the inner voices, but it's also the voices that you get bombarded with, the questions and the comments and the opinions on a daily basis from people. I really like, unless you have awakened to hear sharp and clear whispered ideas so vile that you must fight the urge to do unthinkable harm that does not raise an alarm. You can't ever know what might emerge. Strong lines and very well done.
Yeah, I like what you said about the title. I also really liked the title voices because, yeah, similar to you, I picked up on the idea that it was related to, you know, people's opinions in addition to perhaps internal voices that are being overheard or conversed with, you know. Yeah, and this idea of I really latched onto this second one, the last stanza that talks about, unless you have wakened to hear sharp and clear whispered ideas so vile that you must fight the urge to do unthinkable harm that does not raise an alarm, you can't ever know what might emerge. You never know who you can talk to. You know, people want to ask you about things, but if they haven't experienced it, you know, I get intrusive thoughts. I still get intrusive thoughts. I'm very good at dismissing them. But I wouldn't call them necessarily voices. It's just thoughts that I have. And sometimes they're inane. Like, sometimes I'll think the most ridiculous thing, and then it's easy for me to talk myself out of that because it's just wild, you know. I'll be just walking around my workday, and all of a sudden I'll have this random thought of just, like, you need to lose 400 pounds. And I'm just like, that's not possible. Like, I don't weigh 400 pounds, so I can't, like, what is that? And then I can just kind of chuckle at myself. But then there are other intrusive thoughts that I get that are so dark and so nasty that I can't even imagine, like, uttering them to someone else, because the fact that I thought them all at all just kind of disgusts me about myself. And those are a little trickier. And then you can't really bring them up and talk to people about them because, like, you just don't even want to talk about that topic or, like, broach the idea that you even had that idea. So when that's the kind of thing you're struggling with, you know, it's who do you talk to, you know, about just how, you know, deeply disturbing some thoughts can be. You know, and you don't even really want to get into it. Like, you know, not providing examples of those. So I really related to that last stanza quite a bit. And it's true, a lot of people like to have opinions on things. You tell them that you have this specific struggle, and a lot of times people come out with, like, judgments or assumptions or advice. I was at work not too long ago, and somebody was talking about, oh, yeah, well, he was totally bipolar, you know, just, like, crazy screaming, blah, 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 blah. And I literally poked my head out of my office and was just like, you know, there's a real misconception there. Like, you know, like, not all bipolar people are crazy. You know, this, I, you know, a really judgmental and kind of rude thing to say. You know, when I'm just like, you know, I have bipolar. So, like, that, would you describe me like that? Like, I don't think so. So, you know, but you're constantly dealing with hearing that kind of stuff, and it affects you more when, you know, you're dealing with it. So I really liked this. I liked this, how it's talking about external voices and internal voices and how it's hard to, you know, unless you've experienced it, there's no way to, like, empathize. You know, there's no way to understand it unless you've been there. And then how do you connect with someone who's been there when you don't even really want to talk about it? Like, you know, how do you bridge that gap? Or do you even care to? You know, sometimes it's really nice to have someone to talk to, but at the same time, like, in order to have those conversations, you have to admit things that you don't necessarily want to admit and don't want to talk to people about, you know, because they may misunderstand. But I really enjoyed this write. I thought it was wonderfully well done. So thank you, Weaver. We've got 10 minutes left. What you want to do, Ephesiana?
So I also wanted to say that you, when you're talking about you can't talk to people about things because you're worried about what they would think, I have this friend who has borderline personality disorder, and she's kind of like my person who I can say things to like that. And we haven't really been hanging out lately, but she used to text me, and she would be like, mental health coffee break. And so we'd go, and she'd like tell me whatever random thoughts or things that had popped up that would be shocking to most people. And we'd just chat about it and be perfectly like okay, because we're used to like we're both even though I have different conditions, kind of used to having odd, intense thoughts that other people might not get. We also have been through similar traumas, so like we sometimes we don't realize that it's traumatic things that most people would be like balking at, and it's just like it's just part of our lives. So sometimes she'll say something to someone that's just like telling a story of her life, and people are like, "What?" And so she's like, "So this people responded to this like that," and I'm like, "What?" Like I'm like, I guess you could say that would be shocking, and I'm like, but I mean that's just normal for you. And she's like, right? So it's good to have that person who you can be honest with about stuff. It's good to have that connection. And now in our 10 minutes left, I think we're going to do the first prompt of your contest because we only have one right to that one, so we definitely have time to get through that prompt. So the prompt from – do you want to talk about your contest?
Sure. I can talk about my contest. So this contest is based on quotes from a book called Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. Which is a great book. You can read it. It's about childhood friends who decide to write and program a game together. And the book kind of explores their relationship as they navigate friendship, loves, and like the creative process of making a game. But you don't need to read the book. I recommend it, but you don't need to. So the first prompt for this contest is, there is a time for any fledgling artist where one's taste exceeds one's abilities. The only way to get through this period is to make things anyway. That was the prompt.
All right. So the poem that was for that contest is by Jenny the Deep. And trying to figure out whose turn it is. Do you remember?
I have no idea, but I'm happy to read it.
Okay, you go for it.
Okay. This is Fledgling Artist I Am by Jenny the Deep. Folklore fables of fictional fairies lose some people's interest, and yet every artist has an extreme level sometimes. Dodging conformity, creating freely, great things have been invented by a look so unique and shocking at one point in time, inspiring new creative ways to go about things. Not everyone is black and white. Meet in the gray area. Open your mind's eye to my imagination. Away in the enchanted forest rises a dark creature with legs of a horse, thick skin, rough as a crocodile, indulging in the depths of the Emerald Lake with sloth-like lungs swimming as fast as a cheetah, traveling by its dark, fairy queen-sized wings, seducing all who enter her babbling brook. In the end, taste is taste, and sometimes artistic aspirations amazingly make believe and inspire abilities out of others. End poem.
That was really interesting. I lost my page now. Here we go. I love the idea of sloth-like lungs as fast as a cheetah, because sloths and cheetahs are opposite speeds. Swimming as fast as a cheetah and having sloth-like lungs actually works out really nicely. If you breathe slowly, you don't need to come up for air from the water. But I just never would have thought of putting those things together. Sloth-like lungs and fast as a cheetah. I love that. And just the combination of the different creatures is so creative. I adore it. And in the end, taste is taste. You know, everyone is going to have their own opinion about art. Art is very subjective. It makes it really hard to be a judge in these contests because there is no exact formula for poetry. Yes, there are certain styles and, you know, different things that are poetic poetic devices, but really, in the end, it's subjective. What touches you? What fits your taste? Maybe some people care more about the story. Some people care more about the form. It's a mix of things. I tend to like things that hit me emotionally. But taste is taste, and there's different types of things. I thought this was really, really cool, the way that it explored the concepts and about imagination. I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Jenny the Deep. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really liked the creativity of this and the unique phrasing that she used, as you were mentioning, strong imagery and metaphors. I like how it speaks on self-expression and the idea of being a unique individual. I particularly liked in the beginning where she says, folklore, fables, or fictional fairies lose some people's interest, and yet every artist has an extreme level sometimes, dodging conformity, creating freely. You know, I really like how she speaks on the idea of dodging conformity. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, wonderful comment, Pam. I agree. The dodging conformity was really fun. I liked the idea that, you know, there's like these set things that are considered acceptable, and sometimes people, you know, don't think of them openly, and yet everybody thinks creatively sometime, you know, and then she takes it as like an invitation to herself and an opportunity to explore that, the exact thing that she's talking about, to create this crazy, you know, mythical beast with the legs of a horse and crocodile skin and slow lungs, and it's in the depths of a lake with these wings, and it's like some kind of seductress, you know, which is fascinating to try to picture exactly what that would look like. You know, and then to say maybe this isn't to your taste, but it doesn't really matter because it's to mine and it's my exploration, and maybe it will inspire somebody to make something, you know, even more new and different to riff off. So I really liked it. I thought it was very well done.
And we are out of time. So thank you to all our poets and listeners. Thank you, Pam, for being here with us. Babbler, I'm glad that you were able to come despite your computer troubles. And great comments and poems, as always. So thank you very much, everyone. And good night.
Night, everybody.